An independent parliamentary candidate in the Ejiso by-election and former MP for the area, Kwabena Owusu-Idiomi, says the ruling MPP is facing difficulties in retaining the seat due to the party's poor leadership. He says grievances in the MPP's polling station election in the constituency fueled his ambition to go independent, drawing a part of the party along. Mr. Idiomi refuted allegations of being a traitor, insisting President Akufo-Addo should rather show leadership by boldly resolving internal party issues. Nanaya Ojima was at Ejiso as the former MPP MP wrapped up campaign for the by-election.
Big works of the NPP, including President Akufo-Addo and his vice, Dr. Bamia, were present in the final rally of the party ahead of the by-election. The president mounted the campaign platform with some jabs for the former MP who is attempting a comeback as an independent candidate.
So Abawabe to cabinet minister, Abawabe MP.
You unseated a cabinet minister at Ejiso and found nothing wrong with that. But today, you are everywhere talking. Late Sunday night, the independent candidate was on the grounds to wrap up his campaign. Kwabena Owusu-Idiomi severed ties with the NPP after a declaration to run as an independent candidate in the upcoming by-election. Mr. Idiomi claims the NPP lacks leadership, dismissing allegations of being a traitor.
I don't want to say anything bad against the president. He is the president of Ghana. I'm not a traitor. When I lost the primaries, did I go independent? I did not. I took it in faith. But when there is an issue that is contrary to the guidelines and regulations of the MPP party, and people raise concern, if they are good leaders, they should have solved it. If they are saying that I'm a traitor, even while I'm outside, the projects that I and Kofi Job we are doing, they all favor MPP. Adem is not a traitor. They should learn to be good leaders and solve problems that are in the party so that the party can stand up. I'm telling you, MPP has no spirit in Ejiso constituency and even in Ashanti region.
In response to the tag of being pushed by the NDC, Mr. Owusu-Idiomi wants the president to show evidence for the reason. He explains his candidature appeals to NDC supporters in the constituency due to his track record.
If an NDC man, if the president is saying NDC man, he has to prove I am not an NDC man, because NDC people, they like me. All the works that I did, they are all benefiting. Why have they seen me wearing NDC colors? It's because I said I'm going independent. That's why. The people here who are NDC, they want to vote for Adeyemi because Adeyemi did projects that benefited them. Now, let me answer what he said I did it for them. Yes. Even when NDC was in power, I worked for my people. There are some four roads that I requested for from NDC government that was giving me. Four major roads. I did it in NDC time. So all the projects that I did, I loved it and I had it. Having said that, I used my own pocket money. But who is government? Government is all of us. The roads were not done by the president's pocket money. It wasn't by the vice president's pocket money. It wasn't by any of them pocket money. It is the revenue, it is the sources, it's the funds of the state that were used to do it. What is important is that if you are an MP, you lobby for projects for your people.
Earlier, some supporters of Kwabena Owusu-Idiomi hit the streets of Ejiso to campaign. Six candidates are going into the race slated for Tuesday, but the NPP's Kwabena Boateng and independent candidate Kwabena Owusu-Idiomi are in lead to represent the Ejiso constituency in parliament. For Joy News, Nanaya Ojima, Ejiso.
Senior political science lecturer at the KNUSC, Dr. Amache Boate, is meanwhile cautioning the NPP not to underestimate the independent candidate Kwabena Osuidiomi. He spoke earlier on Joy News Desk.
The fact that NPP continues to be in office today and he cannot boast of any major thing that Mr. Adeyemi did not bring there. If that is the case, and Mr. Adeyemi stands tall as far as projects in Ejiso are concerned, then definitely they will lend their support to him. You know, it means that the individual matters, the individual member of parliament matters, the individual's, you know, strong, deep commitment to the welfare of the people he or she represents matters. And that will also show in the way the individual goes about doing what has to be done, lobbying to get, you know, projects for the place. And Mr. Adeyemi's record is, you know, would take a beating. If he could engage the NDC when the NDC was in government and get, you know, something for that, this thing, then he stands tall and strong. Besides, the people in the Jusu know. They know that the current MPP government has not really, you know, I mean, done very well in terms of managing the whole country's affairs. The governance has not been, you know, anything to write home about. They are all suffering. And Joseph's market is there. And when you go there, I was there just yesterday, and it's the place that I personally experienced people complaining about the hardships in the system. So all these things are simply not working, you know, in favor of the party, and neither in the candidates of the party.
I've been joined by Director of Electoral Services at the Electoral Commission, Dr. Sribo Kweku, and to tell us more about preparations. They're grateful for your time, Dr. Sribo Kweku. How are preparations so far for the elections tomorrow?
Thank you, Aisha, and my regards to our listeners. To the glory of God, our materials go to Ejiosu on Friday. We have finished the training on Friday. Yesterday was the last day that we did the packaging. Today we are set to have the vehicle that we use to do the distribution. We will start the distribution at dawn tomorrow. Our target is that by 6 o'clock, for 3:30 tomorrow, all our material should be at the various polling stations. We have 204 polling stations and we are set for the distribution tomorrow.
Already we are hearing of allegations of vote buying. Have you put in place mechanisms to check some of these things? I mean, considering what we've seen in the past.
If you are seeing vote buying, I don't know where the votes are to be sold. So we wouldn't know where the votes are being sold and where they are being bought. So if anybody has an issue like that, you should report the case to the police for it is against the laws of Ghana.
I'm grateful for your time. Dr. Sribo Kweku is the Director of Electoral Services at the Electoral Commission. He says all is set for the by-election tomorrow. Let's stay in the NPP camp because flag bearer Dr. Mamadou Bawumia says he has performed far better as vice president than his political opponent John Dramani Mahama during his days as vice president. He says Ghanaians should consider his performance as vice president and give him the opportunity to do even better as president. Addressing some members of the clergy, imams and the faith-based groups at the Presbyterian Church in Okopon, Mr. Mahamadou Bawumia hinted it is important for Ghanaians to endorse him to consolidate the gains made over the past 7 years under the Akufo-Addo government. Maxwell Kudeko actually is embedded in Dr. Bawumia's campaign. He joins us with more. Maxwell Kudeko, what more can you report from the Bawumia campaign? Maxwell, I'm asking what more you can tell us from the campaign of Dr. Bawumia. Maxwell, can you hear me? All right, we'll try and get Maxwell Kudeko. All right, it seems Maxwell is on. Maxwell Kudeko, what more can you report from the Bawumia campaign? All right, we'll try and get Maxwell Kodeko to tell us more about this campaign team. Right now, let's move on to other stories. The Social Security and National Insurance Trust is this afternoon defending the sustainability of the scheme after reports emerge its reserves could be depleted by 2036. An International Labour Organization actuarial study revealed SNIT may be not be able to pay pensions in the next 12 years due to a myriad of issues. Addressing journalists this morning, SNIT Chief Actuary Joseph Poku insisted that the ILO work was just a projection and will actually never come to pass. Joseph Poku recounted similar projections from 2011 to 2020, which all projected similar outcomes but never happened, assuring contributors that SNIT will be able to pay pensions by 2036 and beyond. Kwakwa Santi, who's been monitoring this for us, will be joining us shortly with more on this one. But SNIT also says that the ILO report shows is that there's an urgent need to increase contributions of members of the scheme. Both the employer and the employee currently pay 18.5% of the workers' basic salary to the scheme. SNIT says that must go up, and they're working to get the buy-in of stakeholders. We'll bring you more after this break.
We all have that friend who wakes up early to go get everyone McDonald's breakfast, but the rest of us sleep in. This is your sign to thank them. And if you're that friend, this is us saying thank you.
Just a friendly reminder that right now, get any size iced coffee before 11 a.m. for just 99 cents. And a satisfying sausage McMuffin with egg is just $2.79. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Upsetting projections that have been made by previous actuarial studies show that in the past, SNIT was going to be bankrupt, but there have never been a time when they've reneged on their responsibility to pay pensions to customers. And so that is their assurance and promise to customers that they are going to fulfill that. And in respect to the question that I asked about what they are doing to make sure that the SNIT scheme is sustainable, they talk about how generally the broad understanding is that the amount of money that contributors pay to the pension scheme must increase. But of course, that is a tedious process. That is a process that would take a lot of time to be able to negotiate with government, with the employers, with the general public, before even Parliament will take a decision by amending the law. And so they believe that it is time for contribution to go up, but they know that that is going to be a process that will take a lot of time to come to pass. And on the specifics of the sustainability of the scheme, they talk about how they are going after private employees who are deducting funds from contributors and are not remitting same to SNIT, time for SNIT to do its investment. Perhaps the biggest issue of all is government's indebtedness, how government is deducting money from pensioners and workers and not paying up at all to SNIT. And in fact, just about a week or two ago, NAGRAS and a number of teacher unions did a news conference where they spoke about how much government was remitting the money that had been deducted from them. And they talked about how 700,000 employees were involved in that scheme. According to SNIT, they are unable to tell us specifically how much government owes. At some point, they offer about 2 billion CDs. At some point, they talk about how they did not know that. But they say that they are aggressively pursuing government to pay up all that is owed SNIT, so that SNIT can take this money and invest in and pay benefits. But ultimately, the assurance to the public is that they have enough money to pay benefits in 2036 and beyond.
Kwakwa Santi is our man following that press conference for us. Let's get on to other stories. In our Dumso Diaries today, we'll take you to Odoko Bozia Junction, where a 53-year-old man and his 50-year-old brother who run a tailoring shop lament how the intermittent power supply is affecting them. Adobe Asari tells a story about the struggles of these artisans in the midst of the Dumso crisis.
Edward Chibble is a 53-year-old man whose livelihood depends only on his handicraft, sewing. The recent inconsistent supply of power is having a terrible toll on him.
I'm experiencing power cuts very well. When the power is off, our work also gets stuck. we don't meet our customers' needs.
His younger brother, 50-year-old Benjamin Jubo, works with him. He recounts how he had to improvise to satisfy a client when doing so took a seat at his workplace.
Sometimes it comes, it goes off and doesn't come until the next day. So 4 days ago, it went off. So I had to run to East Legon to go and do some job for someone because the person needed it so much.
The men share with me how they have no other alternative to make ends meet.
This is what we do to make a living. So when there is no power, you can't do any work. We don't have any other work to do attached to what we are doing now. We are just sewing. Things are stuck. So even if you get a generator and you sew, how much will you charge your customer for the person to be able to pay? Even with electricity, when you charge, they complain. So when you add generator, you buy fuel to sew, and you have to add a little more cost to it. It's very disgusting.
So you use electric machines here. What is the Dumso causing you to do differently?
We use hand sewing machines, but when the light goes off, you can sew. Up to some point, you need the iron to iron. So if it gets to that point, you can't do anything.
So how is the situation affecting them financially?
Power cuts here in Ghana make us lose a lot of money, because in a week, at least, if you don't have anything, at least in a week you can have, if you don't have anything, you can have at least some thousand B. But when power interruptions happen like that, you cannot have that money. You end up maybe what you use to buy food. When you, after buying food, you don't have anything again. Our financial status is not going up. We always drop down.
Now that the lights goes off and doesn't come out, you can't pinpoint on what you get in the week. It's a problem.
The way you have to feed your family is even difficult for us. It's very difficult for us. You know, the children's school and then fees and all sort of those things make us stuck.
These brothers, like majority of business owners, are calling for a load shedding timetable.
The load shedding has to come so that everybody will know how to plan his or her things.
We want a load shedding timetable to be out for us so that we can adjust ourselves. If it has to be a night thing, we can do the night, then the next day when the light will go off, we can sleep. We need a timetable, but the timetable too is not coming for.
Because of the loyalty of their customers, Benjamin and Edward haven't lost any customers yet. However, they feel unsatisfied any time a customer's demand isn't met due to the power crisis.
Are you the tailor doing the job? You feel bad, because that is your customer who has been giving you job all the time for you to get something into your pocket.
In the same vein, some seamstresses at the Kantamandu market here in Accra have not been left out of this crisis. They lament vehemently how they continue to lose customers because of the power cut.
Sometimes our lights go out for 3 days. This retards our progress with work, and we tend to lose customers.
It's
electricity we use in doing our work. So when it goes off, I have no other option than to go home. The power situation is really affecting us. These things I sew are things I sell to take care of my family. So it's troubling when the light goes off. thousands of artisans across the country continue to veil under the devastating impact of Dumso and do not have a clue on how to navigate around their businesses with the back and forth on what really is the cause of this situation. Whose job is it really to ensure a stable power supply for these people? Adobe Asari's report read to you.
On 15 September 2023, the lives of nearly 39,000 Ghanaians changed forever. This is because the Volta River Authority decided to open the floodgates of the country's largest hydro dam, the Akonsombo Dam, citing excess water levels that they claimed threatened the sustainability of the dam. Days later, hundreds of communities downstream got flooded, thousands of livelihoods and homes were destroyed, rendering many homeless and disrupting education. 6 months after that unprecedented, excruciating disaster, the victims are yet to get their lives back as government remains silent on the way forward. Joy News went back into that community to gauge life after the disaster. Here are excerpts of our latest hotline documentary.
The Volta River Authority, the VRA, announced a controlled spillage of the Akosombo Hydro Dam on September 15, 2023, citing excess water levels. However, this single decision became and still is a major disaster in the area thus far, affecting an estimated 39,000 people in the lower Volta Basin. Public toilets, mortuaries, hospitals, refuse dumps, homes, farms, schools, and even roads were submerged. Education was severely disrupted. Schools like this one in Agbetipo in the North Tongu district of the Volta region became shelters for thousands of flood victims. Classrooms became bedrooms, and for months, education was severely disrupted.
They don't have any class to learn. There is nothing like class for them. So UNICEF came to our aid to donate this tent for the teachers and the students to be managing.
Janet Agbavo is the class teacher for KG 1 and 2 here at Agbetipo makeshift, tent classroom. We want to find out from her how she's been coping with the situation. How many kids do you have in this class?
Over 74.
And you are the only teacher?
Yes, please.
Tell us, how are you coping?
The situation here is not easy, but we are managing because the kids too, sometimes because of the hot weather over here, the tent, under the tent is not easy, but we are managing.
The full documentary after the floods airs today on the Joy News channel at 8:30 p.m. on... Please make a date. Now, retired Justice of the Supreme Court, William Atuguba, says fundamental rights expressly guaranteed under the 1992 Constitution are under threat in Ghana. Justice William Atuguba attributed this decline in the enjoyment of rights such as freedom of speech to Ghana's decaying politics and political leaders' lack of respect for these rights and liberties. He was speaking at an event to discuss free speech and academic freedom organized by the Harvard Club of Ghana.
And over again, these freedoms are expressly provided, enshrined, but we cannot enjoy them. That's a fundamental problem to deal with. And I think the problem is that politics seems to have developed into a kind of Bermuda Triangle, not involving the disappearance of airplanes, but the disappearance of fundamental human rights, liberties, democracy. Why does that happen? If that fundamental Bermuda Triangle is resolved, then the freedoms will be stabilized and enjoyed.
Meanwhile, former chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Charlotte Osei, says the state continues to weaponize criminal laws, stifle free speech.
We're clearer in our minds what a democracy looked like and the rules of all of us and why we needed freedom of speech and all the media freedoms. At this point, we seem to have lost our sense of direction. So when we talk about the clamping down on freedom of expression and press freedoms, we tend to focus on the use of state power against either journalists or citizens who have criticized the state or said something the state doesn't like. And that is a key issue. It's a problem. And I think what we're seeing now is, if you read the stories that we see that are reported and you take out the dates and just deal with what is happening, it's very confusing because it's very similar to the stories we had in the military, when we were under military dictatorships, and that's why we're all concerned. So now, if I spoke here today and tomorrow I put out that I had been harassed subsequent to this event, even if it was not true, most people would believe me because of the culture we find ourselves in right now. And it's not just the current one. There are instances in all the regimes under the Fourth Republican Constitution. The issue now is that when you add media plurality, which we have corrupted, rather than it being a vehicle for increasing our freedoms, we have allowed politicians to hijack the ownership of the media houses. And so the plurality of the media houses has now become another tool, either for attack or for suppression of press freedoms. And is not held by the fact that security agencies are involved in suppression. So, for instance, the police can say that you can prophesy if you're a pastor, but do not cause fear and panic. Who decides what is fear and panic? Are we now going to use the reasonable man test in a criminal matter? And even more worrying is the use of the tool of criminal law to fight cases of defamation, especially when the people who are allegedly defamed are political party, politicians.
We're still live on Joy News today. We're coming to you from our studios in Kokomlemle. We're on DTT because we're free to air. Let's take a break. When we return, there's a very latest coming from the world. Welcome to the business segment. I am Emma Davis. Interest rates continued to fall on the yield curve since January 1, 2024. That's according to Treasury bills auction results by the Bank of Ghana. The government once again failed to meet its target as liquidity continued to tighten. Here's more.
Indeed, liquidity on the money market appears to be tightening following uncertainties regarding the government's debt restructuring with euro bond holders. The yield on the 91-day bill tumbled by 10 basis points to 25.54%. That of the 182-day bill also dropped to 27.64% from the previous week's 28.14%. The 364-day bill again eased by 59 basis points to 28.24%. Meanwhile, the government failed to meet its T-bills target by 10.58%. It got 3.11 billion cedis as against a target of 3.478 billion cedis. The 91-day bill was, however, the most patronized financial instrument. 1.983 billion cedis, representing 63.76%, were tendered and all were accepted. This was followed by the 182-day bill, in which 878.6 million cedis was tendered and the uptake was the same.
Chief Executive of the Kufuor Foundation, Professor Bafua Ajimangia, has asked the government to ensure its agricultural policies attract more youth to the sector. He suggests the re-examining and adoption of agricultural policies under the Nkrumah and the Champion regimes to get the youth interested in the sector. His request comes on the heels of the current abhorrence of farming by the youth. As the country's active farming population wanes, there's more in this report.
It is estimated that Ghana's active farming age is plummeting as the older generation is now holding the fort to keep the agricultural sector booming. This is as a result of the lack of interest in agriculture by the youth, owing to a non-revolutionized technology-based agricultural system. Speaking at the second edition of the J.A. Kufuor Youth in Agribusiness Festival in Kumasi, CEO of the foundation, Professor Ajimangia, emphasized the need to adopt farming practices that would attract the youth.
The mode of farming has changed. We're in a different world, technologies and all. And young people don't have what it takes to acquire those things. That's why I'm very particular about the kinds of policies that can provide the support that will make agriculture more attractive. Mind you, the farmers we have are aging. So if you don't even get replacements, young people like you and others to get into farming, a time will come we won't even have farmers. In Kumasi time, we have what we call the workers' brigade doing farming. Maybe there are some problems with that. We can examine it to see if we can modify that concept and bring young people in to do farming. Champion's time, Operation Feed Yourself. We can look at it, modify it, and make sure it can get people in to do farming.
The festival is aimed at opening opportunities and nurturing a younger generation of agribusiness experts. Professor Bafua Ajimangia says the festival is motivating the youth to venture into agribusiness.
From the last 3 years, what we do, at least I'm beginning to see real signs of success because we have some of them coming back to testify to what they have achieved over this short period. So we are hoping that today's event will also motivate more young people.
Coordinator of the Agribusiness Festival, Jeffrey Ajiman, emphasized the need to have more youth in agribusiness.
The agribusiness sector presents a very golden opportunity. Opportunity in the sense that the sector is a value chain driven. So it is not just a one-stacked area. The sector starts from pre-production, to processing, to value addition, and to marketing. So we think that the young people can have that information and identify areas within the value chain and the role that they can play. And this is what we are urging them to take advantage of.
Some participants at the festival expressed high interest in agribusiness.
And that you don't have to know a lot of things about agri before you go into the business. I've learned that even if I were to do it as my major profession, I can do it as a side one. I don't have to get any idea about agri before I venture into agri business. I love animals. I would want to rear animals one day.
For Joy News, my name is Emmanuel Batkwifu.
That'll be all for business. For more business news, do log on to myjoyonline.com. I am Emma Davis. JN Today continues. Please stay.